part of being a business owner is you have to look at the landscape and you have to take advantage of the opportunities that are at hand. COVID, although it affected many companies negatively, it gave birth to new companies based on its circumstance. If you really want to grow a business and you really want to have the consumer take action, you're going to need to be more active in your marketing than passive. The only guaranteed way by law is via direct mail. Passive marketing has its limitations because there's so much of it. Direct mail falls in that category of active marketing.
This is Wilson Zare. Welcome to Direct Edge, where we explore the strategic thinking behind sustainable business growth. I'm your host, Wilson Zare, founder of Zaremail. Today, I'm spending time with Robin Michalisco, CEO and entrepreneur who started a number of really interesting business ventures, been in business for decades, and he's offered to share his key learnings with us. So I'm excited to have him here. Robin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Wilson. It's always a pleasure speaking with you. You and I have coffees and dinners and all sorts of things together. We talk about all sorts of business topics, and it's always good to pick your brain and to share ideas.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Robin. I always love spending time together, too. As you point out, we've known each other a long time now. It's hard to imagine, though, even really. I mean, time flies.
31 years, and you know, I remember when Zaremail was launched, and you were there in Northwest Portland, and I remember visiting you and talking about your concept and about the tools that you were going to build, and you built all of them as you envisioned. So that's commendable.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, I wish it was all up and to the right, but there's been a lot of bumps along the way to mix metaphors.
All good things run into challenges, or we wouldn't be human if we didn't have challenges.
No, I don't. Yeah, you know that movie, The Matrix. I don't know if you've ever watched it.
Yeah.
You know? But they talk about, you know, plugging people in, and they tried making it all so people were happy and satisfied, tranquil, but it just didn't work. They had to create a little bit of adversity to make people content. That always strikes me a little odd, but true. Anyway, so if we think about that, think about all of your years of experience, the years we've met each other. I mean, tell us your story. Where have you been? What are you doing? What are you the most excited about?
Well, I mean, when you and I met, I was with R.R. Donnelley at the time, and we were building out software documentation. And at that time, we were planning, a bunch of us, to launch a digital print and imaging company. And that sort of tied into your direct mail, because direct mail was a big piece of what we wanted to do. And so that's how we originally hooked up and started talking and did some work that way. And then along the way, you know, we built that company to $13 million and ended up selling it. And on the way, you and I collaborated on various clients that needed your services and the tools that you offered. I went and launched a technology company that leveraged various technology tools in the print space, and then transitioned into merchandising. And I was with merchandising with PrintBid, ImageX, Inomark, and primarily doing a lot of Nike work and a lot of the Adidas and Intel work. Those are, for people that aren't from Portland that might be viewing this, those are some of the bigger corporations that provide opportunities here in the Portland area. And, you know, after that, I went into, water purification because I, you know, my son and his friends were over, and this was, in the early 2010s, and they were talking about how difficult it was to find a way to fill up their water bottles. And so I developed a product, that had a five filters and a 9-stage filtration system that removed everything from the water, including fluoride and chemicals and chlorine and bacteria, and then added back in magnesium and calcium and sodium and the electrolytes. And it had a nice dispenser, and it chilled the water to 40 degrees and it heated it to 85. And, you know, it was a commercial product, sold it to a lot of companies, and it was very successful that way. And now I have a national cleaning and disinfecting company. Now, where that came from was during a pandemic, you know, there were so many businesses shutting down. Everyone was sent home, and there was all these buildings that needed to be disinfected for COVID and taken care of from a cleaning and disinfecting perspective. And so that's how we launched that company, to take advantage of the pandemic, because the water filtration company was closed down because it was a commercial water purification company and everybody went home. So there was nobody using the water dispensers, and there was nobody in the buildings. Everybody was working out of their home. And so the part of being a business owner is you have to look at the landscape, and you have to take advantage of the opportunities that are at hand. And COVID, although it affected many companies negatively, it gave birth to new companies based on its circumstance. And so we've been doing that since 2019. And now I'm 61, about to be 62. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do the next 20 years? I'm not one for retiring. So we watched our parents, three of our parents, pass away with assisted living, and how horribly they were treated by assisted living, how they were isolated, how they were given poor nutrition, how they suffered with depression. So we decided to launch Seniors Health and Seniors here in Oregon, and basically give people an option to assisted living, whether they were recovering from a surgery or an injury, or whether they're spending the last few years of their life, they could spend it at home. They could spend it at home in familiar surroundings with freedom, with a dog, with the family and the pets. They're not isolated, but equates to something not much more than a prison, in my opinion. And so Seniors Helping Seniors allows senior caregivers, which is a huge pool of seniors that nobody wants to hire. Nobody wants to hire because they're too old, because they're not young and hireable at a low rate. And so our caregivers are seniors. So they're Seniors Helping Seniors in home services, whether it be companionship or taking care of pets and looking or driving them to an appointment or picking up a prescription or cleaning them, whatever it may be. The seniors in home are being taken care of by people that understand what it's like to be old, understand what it's like to be at the last period of their life and want to be treated with dignity and respect, compassion.
You know, I think my dad just passed away a couple of years ago. My mother is, up there in years too. So, I mean, we have a lot of issues to deal with. I actually had this interesting interview I did. It's a few years ago now with a guy named Rick Miller. And Rick Miller ran an assisted living place called Avamere. And he told us this interesting story about his journey and what that looked like. And one of the key learnings for him was that most people didn't want to be there. You know, they wanted to be in their own home. They wanted to be around their own friends. They wanted to be able to take care of themselves, control their own destiny. So as soon as he shifted his thinking from how do I take care of people to how do I make people more self-sufficient? How do I give them the tools they need to care for themselves? Some leave. Some left, some stay, because not everybody's capable of doing that. But all of them seem to be a little happier with, you know, with the situation at hand. So he said it was completely counterintuitive because that's not what you feel like you should do. But in this case, it turned out to be better for the people he served and better for his business as well.
Interesting. Well, to wrap this topic up, you know, one of the things that we're facing, that you and I face and everybody our age is facing, is that, you know, as good of parents as we are, our children, and Tamara and I have four children, our children are not equipped, nor are they mentally prepared to take care of us in any capacity. And so the sooner we accept that, it's different than it was many, many years ago with our parents. And so, you know, we're on our own and they don't understand what it's like to be old. They've been shielded from it. Social media doesn't express it correctly. And so there's an epidemic of lack of empathy and compassion toward people that are aging, not by purpose. Our children don't mean it by purpose. They just haven't been properly prepared for death. And they avoid the subject, and it affects everybody because everybody will die. And it's really interesting with talking to them on how little they understand about what's going to happen to us when we get old. And they're not prepared to deal with that. So we have to take it as we have to plan for our last days. And we want to plan them in such a way, most people do, while we can experience our family and our pets and our home and our familiar surroundings, right up to the hour of our death, as they say.
Yeah, it's interesting that years ago, I spent time studying Asian cultures. I mean, as a constant, you know, research project, I guess, but I did a big project for Nike. And one of the things that happened, we looked at Greater China. And one of the things that was interesting was that, unlike here in America, a lot of those families are built around the idea of elder care. You know, when somebody gets too old, they go to live with the oldest son. The oldest son family takes care of dad and mom. Or, you know, when one of them passes away, the other one. And the families are built around this idea of sustainable home care. I mean, for lack of a better word. But I don't really seem to have that as much here.
No, none, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like not only an interesting business proposition, but it sounds like an important and valuable one as well.
Yeah, how much my involvement will be in the company is yet to be seen, because in Oregon, a lot of it's run by the administrator. And so we may just be a silent owner and have administrator and other personnel run the company under our guidance. It's probably what it'll shape out to be, since Oregon is very strict on the licensure requirements and how the company's run. So it's best run by an administrator and probably a registered nurse as we add medical capabilities.
Yeah, Robin, let me, if I can, you know, given the nature of our podcast, let me shift gears a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about marketing. I mean, this business, it sounds like it's still in the formation stage. So you may or may not be, you know, really focused on getting new customers at this point.
It's totally about getting new customers. And it's totally about that. And so there's, you know, there's caregivers and then there's clients. And, you know, with this, you know, so how it relates to direct mail is that, you know, a lot of people don't realize that direct mail is the only guaranteed deliverable message. You know, I know there's a lot of people that market via email, market via web links, web browsers, market via social media, but none of those are ever are guaranteed to be received by the recipient. Only direct mail is legally bound to be delivered to the recipient. And so if someone wants to reach out and have their message, their vision of their company received by their intended recipient, the only guaranteed way by law is via direct mail. And so whether it's Seniors Helping Seniors that I'm doing now, or whether it was, cleaning, disinfecting, or whether it was water purification, whatever it may be, if I really want to reach an audience and I really want to tell my story and I really want that message to reach a recipient that I've targeted, direct mail is really the only guaranteed way to do that.
Right.
And people could talk all day long if they want about emails, about social media, about any other marketing capability other than face-to-face. Obviously face-to-face, but people have to be there. So if you're face-to-face, you have to have people come to you. So you're doing a trade show or whatever it may be. It's a roll of the dice of who's going to come by and talk to you about your business. So that's a topic. And why I bring that up is that's a topic that you and I have discussed many times, and what keeps us engaged over the years, not only on a personal basis, but on a professional basis, because what you do and the tools that you have they have so many applications to help your company grow. And a lot of it is being overshadowed by what I call as soft marketing, which is Instagram, Facebook, X, email, all that soft marketing. Maybe it reaches who you want. Maybe they read it. Maybe they don't. Everybody reads their mail. Everybody opens their mail.
Hey.
Everybody.
Well, certainly everybody in our demographic.
Right.
Some of the younger folks these days, prying that phone out of their hands is a little tough.
They still open their mail. They may not get much mail, but they still open their mail.
So this is interesting, because one of the topics that comes up often is this idea of digital. Digital is fast, can be interactive, it's inexpensive in some cases. But we talk about marketing and having a toolbox of tools, and do they have to be mutually exclusive? Is it just digital, or is it just mail? Is it something in between? How do you really figure out what's the right tool to use for different applications?
That's a great question. I think a lot has to do with the product or services that you're providing. Now, if you're building a company based upon mass, I'm going to charge $1 a month, just an example. So, and I could scale it to 10 million people. That's one thing. Another thing is that if you have, a product or service that costs $5,000, or maybe it's a recurring cost of several hundred dollars a month, a service or something like that, it changes the whole game, so to speak, because now you have a situation where you can communicate value and what it does for the consumer, for the buyer. What does it do? Well, you can now target it. So you can now do some research, and you could pull lists, and you can target your marketing to be specific for the recipient based upon the value proposition of your company. And so I think that it depends on your company and what product or service that you're selling. And there's always the let's go mass. That's one thing. That's like a Spotify kind of product. But then, if I'm selling re-roofing, I don't need a million customers. I'm going to do really great with 10,000 customers, or maybe 5,000 customers over a year, and maybe 1,000 customers. So it really depends on the product or market, the product or service that you're marketing, in my opinion.
Right. Well, I mean, that's really, you know, I think it's really great input, and you know, and I could see that coming into play for sure. You know, in recent years, we've started talking about the customer journey, this idea that a customer starts out maybe not even knowing they have a need, and we're going to interrupt them and make them aware and give them the tools they need to get the problem, you know, the product or service that helps solve their problem or helps meet their needs, best meet their needs. Is there a way along that journey that we can use different kinds of tools to help them move them towards a solution?
That's a great question. I never thought of it from that perspective. You know, marketing has changed drastically. I remember back in the early 2000s, prior to the recession of 2007, 2008, 2009, marketing directors were hugely important and made really great money. I mean, because I was a director of marketing in a couple companies, and I had to work really hard, but I got paid really well for it. But I had public relations, I had press releases I had to write, I had product literature I had to design, I had videos I had trade shows, you know, everything has changed. So recently I remember I did a little research on marketing positions, and you know, most of them are down 70% in what they pay, and the requirements that they hire for are significantly less. So you're dealing with a less educated, less motivated user of those tools. So educating them on what tools are available for them to perform their job duties is quite different now. And it's hard to reach them because a lot of times they're doing things that they're comfortable with and not necessarily what might be the right tools to help them achieve success at that particular position. So are there ways to do it? Yeah. I wish that, it starts with education. You know, if they're going to get a degree, my degree in business administration with a marketing minor is completely different now than it was then. So I don't think a lot of people realize the tools that are out there. I know when I talk to people about some of the tools that you have, they're almost shocked and they go, really? I could just drag and drop a document icon on my computer and it would image it and mail it. You know, obviously it doesn't do it digitally, but it would go to your location and it would be printed and mailed. And I don't have to do anything else but that. Yeah, it basically works very similar to that. And they're really blown away because they're just not educated on what is possible out there. So what you say is absolutely right. I mean, there has to be a better way to help educate people on what tools are available. You know, people know Instagram and Facebook, and there's been so much marketing about those tools and how you can create a little ad and how that's created and how that works. But a lot of the tried and proven techniques of marketing, a lot of them have been forgotten. A lot of them have just flown under the radar and not been given the due that they should be because of their excellent execution on a message.
That's a really great input, Rodden. What would you say when people think about living in a world of 10-second short form video? I mean, so much of the population just seems to be glued to their smartphone screen, and their attention span seems to be super short. So how do we engage with them? How do we get their interest? How do we help them towards a solution?
Well, you know, We have those discussions with our kids because they come over and they're on their phone all the time. And the attention spans have gotten shorter. And social media has fed that fire, so to speak. That's an excellent question. I don't know if I have the answer to that. I still go back to, I open my mail. So this is back on the back end of it. If I open my mail and I look at it, it takes longer than 10 seconds to do that. Now, I notice by talking to my kids that a lot of them just aren't on any mailing list. They almost all of them, and they're all in their late 20s and early 30s. They all fly under the radar. It's like, also they don't subscribe to lists. They don't give out their address. And I don't even know if how much mail they get. They probably get a lot less than I do. So educating them so that their attention spans are a lot more detailed than just a glance. That's a challenge. I agree. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I'm not sure we have a solution yet. I mean, we can try and get in the stream, you know, we can try and embrace those tools too. But I mean, it seems like there are some messages, and we deal with this in mail too. When people come in and they say, I want to reuse the mail to reach out and touch people, but I want to do it as inexpensively as possible. So I want to use a postcard. Well, a postcard has a similar issues. I mean, they're inexpensive. It's like a little billboard in the mail. So you get an immediate impression. But what happens when you have a complex message, something you can't communicate in a single picture or in two sentences? I mean, then what do you do? How do you engage people and educate them? And I mean, education is an important piece of sales in a lot of cases.
Absolutely. You know, what's interesting is this. So the situation is hugely skewed, and it's skewed because of this. So if I go and I buy a lead generation company's services, okay, hey, you know what? I'm starting Seniors Helping Seniors, and boy, I need some clients. And can you help me with that? Oh yeah, sure. We can do that. We have all these people in our network. Well, you know, if you run the numbers of that, I would typically get a contract similar to this. When we send you a lead, it's going to be $60, whether you convert it to a sale or not. Okay. $60 for a interested party, and people are complaining about $1 for direct mail. So when someone comes to you and says that they want a direct mail piece, they want it as cheap as possible, I think a lot of times we might have to do an analysis and comparison. Because the other ways that they're attempting to reach people aren't cheaper and probably not, well, definitely not more effective. But it's lost its luster because of technology. But I believe that there's going to be a rebound. I believe that social media has its challenges and is at the peak of what it can do, and that direct mail stands to gain for obvious reasons of the quality of communicating a message to the desired recipient and the delivery of that message being guaranteed by the United Postal Service.
I think that helps. I mean, I think that can help sometimes.
I mean, if you haven't discussed, well, you need clients, right? Yes. Well, how do you want to get your client? How do you get your clients now? Oh, well, you know, we do trade shows, we do this, we do, you know, if you talk, you just, we have to have a situation where we talk through the options, talk through what they're doing, talk through what's a best fit for them, how to approach it, and educate them on the real costs of marketing. If they're sending out thousands of emails and getting nothing, then they don't have any sense. If they're spending some money and they're sending direct mail out and they're getting 10%, that's still a hugely economical way to do it.
So you feel like in your current business that mail has a role to play, or the economics behind mail makes sense?
Absolutely, because this target audience with Seniors Help and seniors are seniors, and they're not trusting their life to social media, and they're not trusting their education on email. Reaching out to them via direct mail, they love to open up their mail, read their mail, learn about the world through mail. So absolutely, that would be a critical part to a marketing strategy for this type of business.
Okay. So let's, do you use, or have you used over the course of time, multi-channel kinds of campaigns? I mean, and how do those all fit together to drive demand?
Well, at PrintBid and ImageX, of course, it was all marketing, you know, and we use multi-channel marketing. Nowadays, with the businesses that I've had, you know, franchises, a lot of times we hire like Bonsai, for instance. That's a national, marketing company. We hire companies like that to do our multi-channel marketing. You know, I'm limited in the scope that I can do out of my home office. But I think ultimately, you're going to need to take that approach. But one component that's commonly forgotten is the direct mail piece of that.
So if you were trying to advise somebody who was using direct mail for the first time or considering it, what would you say are the key elements for success? What should they focus on? What should they try to avoid?
Well, I'm no direct mail expert, but I enjoy what direct mail I receive, and I've enjoyed using direct mail as a tool. And I think, doing the demographic and the lists are critical. You know, it's interesting just before the pandemic, through the pandemic, there were so many companies providing, quote, lists. You know, and how they're getting those lists. A lot of times they weren't able to even provide that information. So one of the great things that you have is the ability to source the mail lists. So you have to make sure that you know who you're targeting and where to find those clients, where to find those addresses and names, and then to have the right message tailor-made for them. And, you know, sometimes pictures are appropriate. Pictures are worth 1,000 words. And other times you really have to write it out. So there has to be a lot of thought given to where am I going to find my clients? What is the message going to be to those clients? How is it going to be sent to the clients? When, what does it look like? Is it a colorful piece with images that help paint a picture of the service or product that you're selling? Or is it a very straightforward business letter that has, that's mostly text and sort of lays out what you do, why they should use you, and what they're going to get from using your product or service. A lot of thought has to go into that, and it has to be created in such a way that it reaches the recipient in the language that the recipient is going to relate to the product or service that you're offering, if that makes sense.
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, especially within industries, people often use industry-specific language. You want to feel like people feel like, you know what you're talking about, you're connected, you're, you know, you're speaking their language, to quote a song. All great stuff. I mean, you know, one of the models we use when we talk about direct mail is this one 70-20-10, 70% list, 20% offer, whatever's left is creative, which is interesting because a lot of agencies tend to focus on the creative first because that's the fun and interesting part.
But, well, and to be fair, that is also what they can bill the most for.
Right. Okay.
A lot of it is revenue, you know, producing tactics.
No, it's true. I mean, there's an element of that, but a lot of stuff with data, you know, identifying the right target audience, identifying the demographics and the value proposition and the messaging. I mean, that's all hard work. I mean, somebody's got to, I mean, a lot of it's done with a spreadsheet or, you know, or talking to people. And I mean, certainly it's not as fun as drawing things on the whiteboard. You know?
No. And well, right. Well, also, you know, also the old days of the door-to-door salesman, it wasn't a lot of fun either, you know, and so, you know.
Well, one of the things they talk about, you know, or I hear people talk about is, you know, isn't mail going away? You know, isn't it a dying medium? And maybe, I mean, in some cases, mail volume is down. Transactional mail, credit card statements and stuff like that, certainly down. But a lot of the traditional direct mail we see, I mean, continues to thrive. And one of the reasons why it thrives, going back to this idea of a spreadsheet, is that it's ROI driven. I mean, postage stamps, you know, you could talk about free mediums. So if I'm going to send out email or I'm going to, you know, do search engine optimization, the feeling is that the free, you know, even though entrepreneurs undervalue their own time, but the feeling is those mediums are free or nearly free. But with mail, we've always had to deal with the cost of postage. And every time I put a stamp on something, it costs money. So every time I send something out the door, it has to produce a return. And people have built their entire marketing outreach around that. And so as long as it continues to produce an ROI, a return on investment, lifetime customer value, then it feels like people will continue to do that.
I agree. I don't think it's dying. I think that, you know, the reports of my death are premature. Absolutely. So, you know, I think, you know, I have on my wall, I have, New Seasons and Ace, all sorts of mailers from them. And I have coupons that I use and I have, you know, people that reach out to me and want to, maybe do some insulation or some work on my house. There's a lot of different things that I receive and that I subscribe to that, helps educate me on my options. And so I think, you know, you mentioned the whole bank cards and all that, you know, that's one of the funniest things too, because, you know, we always opt to have our statements mailed to us, you know, and part of it is, that, you know, we want to be in control of cutting them a check and paying them, not them deducting it from our checking account, you know? So you do that by not opting for paperless billing and having them bill you, and then you send them a check, you know? So Many people would say that's ridiculous, that's old fashioned, but it prevents mistakes, and mistakes happen. And so I think, you know, people's belief that direct mail is a dying, I think you're going to see that it's going to continue to be strong and then will grow for certain applications, not for everything.
No, exactly. I mean, it's certainly digital media has grown and it does produce ROI for certain people or for certain applications. And I have great examples I've shared over time of multimedia campaigns where, you know, we look at a customer journey and at one point it makes sense to outreach with digital. And certainly, I mean, most marketing outreaches include a website at the very least, you know, to drive people to.
Right.
And maybe use some electronic media to do that, to drive traffic. But, you know, you may also go out and visit local organizations. You might use yard signs. You might use door hangers. You might, you know, you might use direct mail, and you might use different mixes, different pieces of that mix at different points along that process.
Absolutely. Well said. And then, you know, I always go back to passive versus active marketing. You know, the whole digital world is so built on passive marketing, meaning, you know, there's a, you're just, somebody's on their phone and you run an ad past them. You have no idea whether they're interested in your product or not, or whether, whatever it may be, you know, versus active marketing, which is, you know, you've done your research and you send them a targeted message in various forms, like you said, you know, maybe mailer one, mailer two, mailer three, different message or messages that reinforce one another or take them along the line to making a decision. But the active marketing is your best chance to get an action. What we want is we want the recipient to take action of some sort, to sign up, to purchase, to go look, to inquire more, to make a phone call, whatever it may be. And you're only going to achieve that, I think, on a consistent basis with active marketing. And passive marketing, it has its limitations because there's so much of it. People get products and services get lost in a quagmire of passive marketing tactics, whether it be through the social media, whether it be via email, you know, whether they're sending you a link through, you know, to link to their website, you know, and you run the risk of all those of it being fraud, of them capturing your information about, you know, that, you know, you get in, I get a dozen text messages a day from both a Democratic national, by the DNC and Republicans, both of them, constantly sending me, and I block them and I remove them, and they keep sending them because they have more phone numbers. They have an unlimited supply of phone numbers, you know? So, I mean, I think, you know, I think what you say is true, but I think there, if you really want to grow a business and you really want to have the consumer take action, you're going to need to be more active in your marketing than passive. And I think direct mail falls in that category of active marketing. You know, you can't have a salesperson in every house. You can't have a salesperson in every location. You can mail anywhere with a message, and it will be delivered. And someone will most likely, more than any other method of marketing, most likely will read it. And that's all you can ask
right
to begin with.
Well, that's great. I love the sound of that,
Robin. No, I mean,
and we didn't script this.
I mean, I believe that it's growing, even though you hear, you know, rumors of it dying or whatever. I believe it's growing.
Nice. Well, I hope you're right, and we're kind of banking on that. But it's great to hear your perspectives on that as well. Robin, this has been a great conversation. For listeners who want to learn more about your work or connect with you directly, what's the best way to reach you?
Well, I mean, they can reach me directly at my direct line, and that is 503-989-9099.
Unless you're one of those political committees, right?
Right. And they can also email me. I have a lot of different emails. In fact, I was just helping my administrator get her email on her phone, and I looked at my mail app on my phone, and I have 12 email addresses that I have to manage on daily basis, you know. And so the best one is Robin, R-O-B-I-N, period, Michalisko, M-I-C-H-A-L-I-S-K-O at Gmail. But the phone works just as well. Or, you know, better yet, they can always reach me through you. And as we partner and help one another grow our businesses, and any way that I can ever help you, like you've helped me, I'm always available to do so.
Well, thank you, Robin. I appreciate that. We'll make sure that that contact information goes in, is there with the podcast too, so people can find it. If anybody wants to reach me as well, I'm available at wilson@zairmail.com. We can connect on LinkedIn. And you'll find my contact information in the notes section too.
Yeah, I'm in LinkedIn too, of course. You can reach me there.
All right. Sounds great. Well, thank you for joining us on Direct Edge. Remember, sustainable competitive edge comes from building strategies that leverage your core competencies. Identify what makes your organization and offerings unique and valuable, then embrace that as your core, both when operating and planning for the future. We'll be back with another conversation that turns strategic thinking into competitive advantage in our next episode. Until then, keep learning, innovating, and growing. Robin, thank you so much for being here.